to the Berkman Audio Fishbowl from the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. Each week, we feature conversations with leading cyber scholars, entrepreneurs, activists, and policymakers as they explore the bleeding edge of the internet and technology, democracy, law, and society. For more information on the Berkman Center and for more programs like this, visit cyber.law.harvard.edu.
All right. Thank you very much for the opportunity to have the speech here. I try to stand even though my legs are not perfect today. So Herkko already gave the introduction of my background. So I have a law degree, I have a PhD from Technical University, and now for the last year or so I've been a CEO of a software company. It's good to see so many people here. I'm very happy to have the opportunity to have this speech, and I also send wishes to everyone who is watching this live, especially all the Tuxera people. I know that there's at least two people watching it at the moment. The topic I'm talking about is here. I'm going to talk about patents. Patents in standards and how patents affect free software in general. The perspective I'm having is basically from our company's perspective, how I'm having this speech. And what we do, I try to be as general as possible, but in some examples I go to what we do file system software. Microsoft compatible file system drivers on different operating systems, mainly on Linux, but also on other operating systems. We do NTFS and XFAT. Those are technical standards defined by Microsoft. NTFS dates back to already early 1990s, and XFAT is the latest Microsoft file system technology. If you want to read and write those files from Linux and other operating systems, you need to have this compatibility component, which we provide. We do both open source or free software and a commercial version. And we have to deal with patents every day. And this is what I have learned of the topic. There are a couple of big trends going on in the use of software and in the software industry in general. One was popularized by this Nick Carr. I think this is where he made the best argument so far. Does IT matter? The argument is that software is commodified. Producing software is no more a big deal. You have so much open source out there. Almost anything can be done with software you just download from the internet. You cannot get more value from just having software. The value must come from somewhere else. So-called competitive advantages is not in software. It's everywhere. And this free software has been building on the principles led by Richard Stallman already 20 years ago. GNU GPL license, which says software is free, source code is available, you don't have to pay anything for it. It's freely available out there. There's a lot of developers who work for free software, and free software can fix almost any problem today. This is from ARM, the manufacturer of processors for most of the embedded devices, different kind of devices today which have embedded software. I have a question there. Which of these devices have free software? The answer is very obvious. Every one of them. You have free software today everywhere. In your mobile phone, it runs Android. Even the iPhone, I guess, has some free software basis behind the nice interface. Almost every device has free software. It's commodified. Okay. Then we have the other trend. That trend can be traced back already as well, tens of years in the history. Here's just one example. We have standardized technology, technological standards which companies have to follow, we use every day. Mobile phone is a very good example of a standard which has a lot of patents. The patents are relevant in standards today. So already 20 years ago, when the GSM mobile phone was introduced, which basically still lays the foundation of all mobile communications today. It had like 400 essential patterns. Today we are using these 3G networks, whatever they are called, they have even more patterns. There's tons of patterns in these technical standards. And now the result is here. HTC phone runs Android, runs Linux. Who has an Android phone? So many people have Android phones. So who owns this phone? Who owns your phone? It runs by free software. Is there an owner for that phone? This company claims to own the phone. That's one example. Because of patents. There are tons of companies that have the patent portfolio that basically builds all these phones. And Apple is now claiming that they have patents especially for the user interface of Android. And for some reason, HTC was selected as one of their targets. So basically, you have free software phone, which isn't free software because of patents. And there are a lot of other examples, the same thing. This open office. Free software. Who uses open office? Okay, who owns open office?
Sun.
Sun owns the copyright, that's correct. So they are the partial owner. Who else owns open office? Who?
Oracle.
They own Sun. Yeah. Okay. They own the copyright, the code, that's true. Are there any other owners? Who owns the patents to open office?
Microsoft.
There you have it. Like a month ago, Jonathan Schwartz, who was the CEO of Sun Microsystems, openly blogged. Now he has a blog where he reveals things that he couldn't reveal when he was the CEO. Revealed that some time ago, Bill came to his office and said, Microsoft owns the office productivity market and our patents read all over OpenOffice. And what they wanted, they wanted money. Yeah, Bill Gates. Bill of Microsoft. At the time, he was still there as the CEO, I guess. Steve was also there. So I guess we got the connection. Steve and Bill from Microsoft, okay?
This is the quote. What's the date on when this happened?
I think a few years ago. He blogged like a month ago about the events when he was the CEO. I think he was the CEO from, let's say, 2005 to now 2009. So around somewhere 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Third example, this is a TomTom Navigator. TomTom is known for manufacturing navigators which run on Linux. So the question is again, who owns this navigator? Who owns the software in it? Is it TomTom? No, is it the free software community? Is it all the people? Is it the society? Again, we have the same owner here, at least the company who claims ownership. And here they list the patents. Patent 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, how many there are. In this case, the interesting patents, by the way, were file system patents. This one, common namespace for long and short file names. Common name space for long and short file names. Again, these are called FAT patents. FAT is the standard Microsoft file system that dates back to MS-DOS. They claim ownership of this navigator because this navigator follows some Microsoft standards, de facto standards. Because those standards are patented, or at least Microsoft claims patents over the standard, they claim ownership of the whole navigator and they start a lawsuit.
They claim ownership or just
they claim that TomTom is infringing. I use the words here a bit more freely than I'm not having a legal argument here in the courtroom, okay? But you get the idea. So here we have a problem. We have a societal problem, I think. A lot of free software is going to commodify a lot of things. On the other hand, we have more and more patents. What are the possible solutions for companies, for the society, in the class of free software and patents? Some people, I know free software people, Free Software Foundation at least, has tried to follow this route. Let's have demonstrations, let's try to influence policymakers, let's ban patents, let's get rid of software patents in the first place. I don't think this will work. Actually, in the past, I've been also trying to do the same. I've tried to talk to lawmakers in different contexts in Europe. We have had a lot of discussion for the last 10, 15 years about software patenting in Europe. And the end result is we have as many software patents as in the US. Patents are not going away. So this is a dead end. Second, let's say, solution is what I call here legal engineering. Especially legal academics, scholars have proposed different ways to read the law to solve this problem of free software and patents. Some legal scholars have proposed a thing called estoppel doctrine. That basically means that if a company has patents on standards and the company has been inactive in enforcing the patents, then there should be a presumption that the patent cannot be infringed because the patent has not been used. And in many cases where patents on standards have been actively used, at some point the company has been first inactive and the patent has been, let's say, in secret for many years. Okay, but in practice this doctrine has never been applied in actual case. It's just a theory, but a good one in a way, if it would work. The second point here is calls for competition authorities, antitrust authorities. If we have patents on standards which are important for the society, the authorities, the state basically, should intervene and say, in this case, in these patents, it's free for everyone to implement. You don't have to pay. You can do even free software implementation. But again, in practice, the competition authorities have been not that active. In Europe, we had this Microsoft case. Actually, it's still ongoing. We have several cases against Microsoft. And the end result has been that this solution doesn't work. It doesn't work especially on patents. It's now very clear. The third here, this refers this rant to reasonable and non-discriminatory. That's the legal word. Licensing terms on patents. If companies who have patents are part of these standardization organizations, they always commit themselves to something called RAND terms. They commit to license the patent with reasonable and non-discriminatory terms to the market participants, other companies. Now the idea is that if this RAND would mean in the context of free software, really royalty-free, no charge, it would be compatible with GPL license and other requirements of free software. But in practice, what we have seen is that it doesn't work either. At least so far, it hasn't worked. The standardization organizations are not strong enough. They don't have the interest to enforce these RAND terms with in a way that is compatible with free software. But OK, here are some proposals. And if they would work, they could, let's say, at least mitigate this issue here. So you have the policy option, you have the legal interpretation option, and then you have the practical business option that our company, Tuxera, has been trying to follow. Let's go and do these patent deals. Let's pay the price. Let's pay the price tag on free software. Now this company I'm directing, Tuxera, comes from the open source or free software world. We have been doing for 10 years open source. Free software. The company started from this NTFS file system technology. We have been developing it under GPL license and lately also selling a commercial differentiated version to different device manufacturers. And in August last year, that's me here, I'm at Microsoft in Redmond. This mug is a Microsoft branded mug. We did several agreements with Microsoft. We have an IP agreement with them. We have a so-called interoperability agreement with them. We are probably having more agreements with them in the future as well. We went there and said, all right, there are these patent issues. Let's make a stamp on them. There are these interoperability issues. Let's share information. Let's sign agreements. And all right, this was very controversial from the free software people perspective. We made a pact with the devil, so in other words, and we wanted to see what happens. The problem with this approach of doing a pact with the devil is that a GPL license is very much incompatible with patent licenses. The thing we did with Microsoft is that we basically have a patent agreement with them. Now, depending on the details of the deal you do with the patent owner, it may be that you cannot anymore use GPL license. Because if you use GPL license, the patents have no value anymore. That's the detail of GPL that comes into play. This is my last slide. Most complex one, but also the most important one for my presentation. And this is what has happened with us, and I think here's the problem for free software that should be solved somehow. I don't know the answer yet here. So we had this NTFS file system technology, which is old technology, had been under GPL, developed and supported by us, our company, the free software people who started the company, Tuxera. We have it both under GPL as open source, as free software available for anyone. We have also the commercial version, which we charge money for. And after this Microsoft agreement, it's all right. We can continue to have this model, mainly because we have been doing it for so long and Microsoft understands it. We can make money from it, and that's how it works. It's a sustainable model. But with this new file system, which has tons of patents, and which has not yet been implemented in free software projects, but which must be implemented sooner or later, because XFAT is now part of several standards where Microsoft has been able to put it. One example are these SD flash cards. When the card size goes to 64 gigabytes, everybody needs to use XFAT file system. It's one of the requirements there. The first cards are already out there. When that happens, there's no company supporting free software development. That's because of Microsoft's patents. What we can do as a company coming from the free software world, we can actually use the code we have developed here. We can start selling commercial version of this new XFAT file system based on the work we have done on the free software world. But we cannot publish that source code anymore under GPL terms. Otherwise, Microsoft's patents would lose the value. Microsoft wants to license the patent to everyone. And what happens in practice, this is my guess, is that some, let's say, dark developers will do the XFAT on Linux anyway. We are unable to do it under the current agreement. And the same thing happens that has happened with, let's say, Linux DVD players. With DVD players, you have, let's say, unauthorized players from the Hollywood perspective out there. There may be one or two companies that have a license to sell Linux DVD players, but that's about it. And the same thing I think will now happen with any patented standard on Linux, on free software, unless we have a solution here. The only way to implement patented standards on Linux is through these dark means. Individual guys will do it. You can download them from Russia or Ukraine or something like that, but no company can support free software development anymore if it's under patents. The only way to support this is to have the patent agreement, in this case with Microsoft, and usually the agreement means that only the commercial path is available. In a way, this means I think in the big picture that small companies like startups still have a way to go to the big international software markets. There's sustainable models for software companies to work. This Nick Carr's argument doesn't hold true anymore. Software commodification sort of meets its limits with patents. But on the other hand, this great societal benefit of free software is also limited because of this box here. My challenge to this room and every room that I have this kind of talk is that we need to have a solution here. We need to have DVD players on Linux which are legal. We need to have this kind of file systems which are patented in Linux under GPL in some legal way, even some limited functionality or something. I don't know yet the answer. I'm having the conversation with Microsoft and hopefully something comes out of it. These are just two examples. There are many, many other standards as well with the same outcome.
I mean, you know, the same thing happened with the HPIB bus. I mean, you know the history, HPIB bus.
Yeah.
HP came out with a universal instrument bus. The IEEE decided to adopt it as a standard as the IEEE 488, and then suddenly it turned out that HP had a bunch of patents on it.
Yeah.
What IEEE did is said, well, we only will adopt a company's design as a standard if they agree to allow the patents to be freely licensed. Doesn't work as well here because Microsoft really doesn't need
right.
a standard. They just decide we're going to use EFAT, and if you don't like it, you know, run the Linux file system.
But actually, this EFAT file system has gone through some standardization organizations as well. At least two standardization bodies has accepted it.
Well, to the extent that Microsoft or any other proprietary manufacturer wants to get some sort of standard body, the standard bodies can take the approach the IEEE did, which
mm-hmm.
is require compulsory no-charge licensing of any patents,
yes,
or not allow it to be a standard.
That is one solution, but the problem is that it doesn't work in every case.
Now, I assume you guys are writing drivers, correct? Disk
yeah.
drivers? So you don't have to incorporate a bunch of GPL software in the product that you're selling commercially, because otherwise you'd be in...
Right, that's correct. We do
in
everything in-house.
You'd be between a rock and a
actually,
hard place.
Actually, we do have a huge bunch of open source code, free software code, based on the driver project we have run in the past. And we own the copyright there, so we can reuse the code in these
without,
new drivers.
Even though the GPL license allows you to reuse that without releasing the entire
the
thing?
The point is that we own the copyright.
Okay.
We license it with GPL
okay,
with
so,
other terms as
okay,
well.
Okay, it was your original code.
That's right.
But see, the real
yeah.
problem is you're very lucky because you're doing a targeted system.
Yeah.
But anybody who had a bigger system that wanted to start with GPL but incorporate the ability to use some patented technology is stuck because even if they license it from Microsoft,
mm-hmm.
they still can't comply with the GPL license, so they can't use the GPL code they're trying to use. So, you know, there's yet another problem that doesn't apply to you, but applies
yeah,
broader in the GPL context, which is to the extent you want to start with MySQL or something else and add something that's patented,
mm-hmm.
you can't really because you can't comply with the, you know, releasing what you've done with modifications.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
So what happens if, you know, somebody simply writes this code, sticks on GitHub, says this is, you know, free for anybody, it's the MIT X license, you know, do what you want with this. I take no further responsibility for it.
As long as you're not a commercial entity who
then,
Microsoft's
going to
sue you.
Then you are here. If
anybody
need,
at all yeah. use it because it's just out there?
Yeah, okay. Mm, then no. you are an individual developer right here.
Yeah.
Yeah, use a black hat or something that
yeah.
people don't see you. But if you're an individual, I think nothing happens. Microsoft
right.
will never sue individuals. But if you start a company or some company starts using your code, I think you're in trouble.
Yeah, the answer is
even if the code has this, you know, MIT license sitting on it,
it doesn't help you.
Yeah,
it doesn't
patent,
help the patents.
Yeah, you're if you use a patent, no matter where you get the code,
yeah.
where it comes from, you're an infringer.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
you know, you owe money to Microsoft if you
yeah.
infringe the patent. It doesn't make a difference that somebody wrote the code,
mm-hmm.
and even if they license it, you wouldn't have a license. I mean, that's the thing about patents is it's, you know, there's an absolute liability there. Even if you develop something from scratch and it happens to infringe
yeah.
without any intent.
Regardless of what copyright's sitting on it.
Well, patent's
yeah.
different than copyright.
Yeah.
Patent is really if you
yeah.
use the technique that's claimed
yeah.
for whatever reason, then
yeah.
you're
yeah.
infringing and the owner can restrict you and
yeah.
require you to buy a license or refuse to give you a license.
So this might be naive, but what...
What is unsustainable about the dark software coders from the Ukraine doing this for you indefinitely, since they're not commercial and aren't going to be sued? Like, could you spell out what exactly?
It's unsustainable. I think it's unsustainable because it's the same thing that with, do you know the issue with the DVD players on Linux? You download your Linux distribution from Red Hat or from Ubuntu. You don't get the DVD player there, and they won't support it commercially. It's unsustainable in that perspective.
I see.
You will have this community. It's all right in a way, but it's not right.
You basically give you a hobbyist community.
Yeah, it's a hobbyist community. Mm-hmm. Free software actually becomes hobbyist software if this scenario goes through, and I think it's actually something that is totally contradictory that has happened with the last 15 years. Free software has gone commercial. Big companies have started to support free software with big efforts, and if this goes through, it means we are back in the hobbyist scenario.
And if it expands, so it would be, you know, you download the operating system and then you go and download all the illegal parts one by one.
And I think in the long term, it means that this whole thing will blow up.
If we imagine the scenario, we show the HTC, which is developing Android phones, and if they run GPL software, they couldn't use the XFAT. They couldn't, the HTC phones couldn't accept memory cards that are bigger than 16 gigabytes. Users would have problems.
It's only if they're formatted in that file system. So the solution to that seems to be to say, you know, fuck the file system, use something better, you know. Microsoft won't play nice, then we can't play nice either.
But then you have cars that don't move freely from one phone to another.
Well, they do if they're not going into a Windows 7.
The Android phone already uses a different file system anyway. It's XT3.
I mean, if interoperability with Microsoft isn't needed, then yeah, you can just develop something.
Yeah, that is
new.
True. But as long as you need interoperability, as long as you need any standard with patterns, you have this issue. And I'm having the assumption that the attitude that let's ban patterns, let's forget about these standards, doesn't work. Most people will use these standards anyway. And I think this SD flash cards with XFAT will become reality in 1 or 2 years.
I think it depends on the implementation, though. I mean, like you brought up the TomTom example, and that didn't actually go to court. They did a backroom deal with Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, like, we don't even know what would happen with that one in the courts. So instead of case law, we're having people make deals outside of the courts. And so you have this idea that, oh, probably I wouldn't win that case because, like, the other couple of companies that talked to Microsoft about it made a deal with them, so probably we should do the same thing,
mm-hmm.
which is not necessarily true. It depends on what court and exactly which patent. And so I don't know if it always makes sense to say, like, in a blanket way, like, we should all just accept all Microsoft patents and assume that we'll get screwed if we take them to court. Because some of them are pretty ridiculous and vague.
Yeah, it's true. Many software patents are not good, but from practical perspective, if you want to run a company, if you want to have deals with big companies, make money, you have to accept that some patents are valid and you have to avoid patents and court cases at all costs.
I mean, it doesn't much make a difference if the patent's good or not. It costs between $2 and $10 million to try a patent case. So if the licensing fees are less than that,
mm-hmm.
then you license.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just a straight business deal. Unless you're altruistic and you want to try and invalidate the patent, it's hard to invalidate patents. There's a presumption of patentability, and juries really believe that when they're told there's a presumption of patentability, it's much more than more likely than not. It becomes clear and convincing evidence. Invalidating patents hard, and $10 million is a lot of money.
And then you're still taking chances, right? The deal.
Also, a good company that's building a patent thicket doesn't have one patent. I mean, I worked for an IP company. You know, a startup comes to you, you try to get them 10, 12, 15 patents on the assumption that if you go up to a jury with 5 infringed patents, well, maybe they won't find 3 of them are infringed, but it doesn't make a difference. All it takes is one, because you have to stop whatever you're doing. So, you know, the IP is a very strategic business game, and you know, it's very expensive. The whole goal is to stop other people from infringing on your market.
No, and I think that's why it probably does have to go in a public policy way rather than in a court way, because we know that our courts work in such a, like, whoever has the most money wins. And so,
well, each side has to have at least enough money to try the case, and oftentimes startups don't have anywhere near it. That's why you end up with patent trolls, because they come in and say, well, we'll fund your patent case. So some patent trolls are really bad, but some of them are the only way in which a small company can possibly either fight another company that's asserting patents or protect their patents. I mean, it's a big, complicated business, but there's a lot of money floating around. And this is a problem because, of course, free software isn't about big money, typically.
Right, and I don't think it's actually good for us as a society to pour a lot of money into what you just called a game.
Business is a game. I'm using, if you don't think.
The
problem with patents, software patents, is, you've got this patent system that gives 17, 20 years of protection, depending on when it came out, whether it's a $500 million investment in a pharmaceutical or, some guy sitting or girl sitting in front of her computer cranking out code on a computer that costs $100. I mean, so you've got this real asymmetry in sort of capital investment versus the amount of protection that you get.
Except the cost of getting the patent.
You can get a patent for $20,000. I mean, it's relatively small capital investment.
We are applying patents at the moment, and I can confirm the cost is about there.
You think this could ever lead to a situation where some small country decides, hey, we're going to become the haven for all the people who don't want to deal with patents? And, some little place like Iceland decides, we're going to be the place where you can deposit all this stuff that, might violate somebody else's patent, but since we're a jurisdiction that doesn't recognize any of these patents, this is where you go to do your work.
Well, no, that's where you go to sell your product.
Right. Yeah,
that's right. When you start selling your product,
but you can't
here,
sell your product
then you're
in the US.
Trouble.
What? Yeah.
When you start selling your product here, then you're in trouble.
It's not about where you make the thing. It's where you infringe the patent.
Yeah.
If you want to sell in the U.S., you have to deal with software patents because,
If this banning approach would work, you should ban software patents all over the place, not just in Europe, but also in the U.S., and not just in the U.S., but in Europe and elsewhere as well, all over the place.
But if the violation is under the sort of free software licensing, then wouldn't its creation not necessitate selling it? Like having, for instance, Iceland as a producer of a lot of these software products and the distribution of them from those countries where patents aren't recognized, wouldn't that be sufficient for the free distribution of these types of softwares, or why would that not?
The problem is the end use. If a company starts using it, it's a patent violation. Commercial use of a patent is basically a patent infringement.
No one bothers to sue anyone for patent infringement unless they're making some money. So if I gave you software just for fun, it's like there's no, like there could be infringement under the law, but nobody cares because they take the two of us for whatever we're worth, and that's still not worth $10 million. But as soon as someone is making money and you say, like, we can sink your company and put you completely out of business, like all of you, then it's worth suing someone.
So how do you see the field changing when there's a lot of companies who are producing gadgets that have GPL software, but are also big owners of patent portfolios or big patent portfolios like Google or IBM, who have fought the fights of free software community, who have funded those patent wars or
they use it for defense.
There are examples of big companies actually donating patents to, let's say, the free software community that developers can use these patents and so on, but again, it's not the rule. Some companies have done it to limited extent, but not all. And as long as you have companies like Microsoft, which tend to be very much keeping the patents inside, then that's it. It doesn't work. And there's no reason for companies to just give out the patents.
I mean, the solution suggested in the presentation focuses on a kind of contractual arrangement to be agreed upon between the two parties, in this case, between your company and Microsoft. But we cannot reasonably expect that it will happen every time. So what happens if, the suggested contractual arrangement does not serve the interest of Microsoft, for example?
Very good question. So in our case, I think we are working on a solution and to some some degree already like solved it, at least with NTFS. But I had here in the previous slide some other proposals by legal scholars. This would be like applied to every case if the law would be interpreted in different way. I think we need a big case that could change the law and how it's interpreted, how patents on standards are read, how lawyers are reading them.
I believe it is much more reasonable for us to focus on your, first suggestion to focus on, something other than the conventional, remedies provided by patent laws or other relevant areas of IP law. You mentioned a couple of, remedies already provided by conventional IP regime, for example, estoppel doctrine or compulsory license.
Yes.
But I do not believe that the compulsory license will work well with the area of technology focusing on electrical engineering, where one product involves multiple number of patents. So compulsory licensing normally worked well with pharmaceutical field, for example.
Yeah, that's true.
To force somebody, for example, a global pharmaceutical company, to give license for the benefit of the community or the public health, for example. So I wonder if we could heavily rely on the suggestion provided by your presentation that we could compare.
It's actually proposed by some scholars. And okay, in the Microsoft case in Europe, the end result was sort of Microsoft had to license out, they did it voluntarily after the case, they had to license out all the intellectual property, including patents, which were part of the interoperability information requested by this one project, the Samba project. And in that case, it worked out, and it was all IP, even though there was a lot of different intellectual property, at least Microsoft claimed, trade secrets, patents, copyrights, on the information they disclosed. But I don't think it works as a general rule, and I think you're correct that we cannot trust on that doctrine.
Thank you. I know the compulsory licensing, it works with copyright pretty well. For example, radio stations are using a lot of copyrights from different authors, and they're contributing, say, 20% of their total income. And the compulsory licensor divides that to all the rights owners. So maybe, I don't know, could that work in the patent?
Well, if the whole world would agree that there's a compulsory or some kind of licensing system for patents, and there's one category called free software, and in every case you have a standard, you have patents, and free software people need it, they can get it.
But it still wouldn't be compatible with GPL, right?
It can be if the terms are compatible, that the patent is no royalty. It's free of charge, basically. Or there can be an upfront fee, but no royalties. Anything else?
Well, to what extent do you think that the situation is novel today? Because if you look at it with a longer view, the particular legal instruments might be new, and the free software movement's status might be new, but it seems like interoperability is like a central and fundamental problem in information technology and has been for decades, and that sometimes it comes up in the context of antitrust or, with AT&T or it's IBM mainframes and the cables or, it's always this thing that sort of comes up and comes up and comes up. So I wonder, is there some sort of like overarching policy framework that we could use to think about it, or is this a need sort of intellectually to think about these things together instead of saying like today it's free software and the software patent crisis, whereas in the 70s it was natural monopolies, antitrust, and AT&T or something, but underlying all of that is interoperability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. That's very true, and I think we can learn something from historical examples. I think it was in the early 1990s, then this interoperability debate was not on patents, but it was in copyright law. Mm-hmm. and how it was solved that the copyright laws, at least in the United States and in Europe, were amended so that if you develop interoperable software and you need to copy some parts of another software, you can do that copying. It's not an infringement if that's needed for interoperability. It was solved inside copyright law by lawmakers. But today, for patent law, I don't know, the legal process of lawmaking is just too political and there's too much vested interest. Or what has happened, I don't know, but I don't believe in this banning solution or a lawmaking solution. It just doesn't feel realistic at the moment.
To what extent have problems like this ever come up before the computer age? Since, I mean, interoperability issues go back a long way, you know. Cars have to be compatible with roads, railroads have to be compatible with trains, electrical plugs have to be compatible with appliances.
Yeah, that is the general frame for a
car. Have these issues ever come up in these earlier, you know, historical contexts, and how were they resolved then?
Well, yeah, they have come up, and you have the railroad networks, and usually, or I don't know whether it's a general rule, but there's a lot of case law where in practice, in individual cases, basically some kind of compulsory license has been like granted. But okay, in this case, I think the major difference is free software and this GPL license, which basically demands that if there's a compulsory license, it must be royalty free. And that's something that's very difficult for accept companies like Microsoft. Ask the guys there. I don't think
have
so.
Have you ever met Richard Stallman?
Rewriting the GPL to make it easier for software patent trolls?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Richard Stallman. I could check with RMS. But I already know the answer.
Okay.
In reality, how many software startups get into patent troubles? Some companies, successful companies, I never heard they got into trouble.
Okay, at least in our case, we basically started from a problem situation. We were doing Microsoft standards on Linux and other systems without any agreement with Microsoft. We were in trouble. Our customer basically started asking, what about Microsoft? What about the patents? And then we went to Redmond and had the deal. And in our case, at least, I know that it was basically the beginning of the company to have the deal with Microsoft, have a operating freedom. But I kind of generalize, of course. I don't know the statistics here.
Is there any case that existing software that you have a conflict with each other, you have to do the invalidation of those patents?
I think there are many cases where patents have been invalidated.
No, I mean in your experience. For example, some companies have some kind of a patent on the software, which is not the free software, but at the same time, other companies who are running the free software, they just use this mechanism to fight back to like Microsoft or any.
How do you mean fight back?
Invalidate.
Okay. Well, in general, if you have a patent infringement claim coming into your company, the first thing you reply is that these patents are invalid, of course. And then I think it's in every case that goes to court or goes further between companies, you try to invalidate the patents. And then there have been a few non-profits that have tried to invalidate patents which are considered socially important. I think in the US you have at least this PubPat organization. I don't know how active it is today. And Free Software Foundation has perhaps been as well involved.
Yeah, the most recent case on patents was actually like a business method patent. So that was the Bilski case. We've got an amicus on that. And that was asking the courts to take the opportunity time in 20 years to limit what's patentable. And so they did do that. It remains to be law that's upheld in future case law, but it said that it has to be a transformation or a device, which does limit a lot of software patents. And so if some of the lower courts choose to uphold that, when software cases go to court, then that's a win. But it looks good, and they've given them the teeth to do it. That's probably the most important patent case that's happened in U.S. courts.
EOPEP involved with that?
Was that?
Was that EOPEP that was involved with that one?
EFF. Oh, I think they did also file an amicus. We filed an amicus. There was a lot of folks signed on, and because it was a business method patent, there was a lot of folks not even in the software realm too. Like,
I was right, because I know I've gotten emails from EFF saying they have some sort of bounty hunter campaign to bust patents, but I don't know how active it is.
Oh, yeah, they're doing, that's a little bit different. Our goal is, at the FSF is to end software patents altogether. And I think EFF's goal is a little bit different. Like, I read their emails sometimes, but I think they have specific patents in mind rather than like the whole general patent system.
Yeah, EFF has a webpage where they have a top 10 patents they're looking to bust, and they're trying to get crowdsourced to find prior art.
Mm-hmm.
That's one method to go after patents. Another is, I mean, the problem is invalidating really broad patents is possible. I mean, Grolier's claimed a patent on multimedia, which Microsoft and a bunch of other people just went up in arms and creamed. I mean, if you can get a large enough group of big companies to go after a patent, you're fine. These are lots of little teeny patents on small pieces that are much, much harder to invalidate. For one thing, Microsoft will license them a relatively reasonable amount, and most companies would rather do the license. So it's hard to get the mass momentum to, go after these. Also, they're much harder to invalidate a small patent than a big general patent. So I think that the idea of getting some sort of mass movement, except what EFF does, is somewhat difficult for invalidation.
But it's also interesting that in this talk, we've seen the Valiant startup, struggle with the IP about patents in order to make a business out of something. But there's another frame, which is, the startup that's forced to contribute to the software patent problem, right? So, for example, if you're doing a startup or commercializing anything and you need funding, I mean, I gather that it's very routine for you can have a startup full of, say, CS and electrical engineering people who are completely against the idea of software patents and think they're ridiculous, and then in order for their startup to be funded, their venture partner will say, we're not going to give you any money unless you do these software patents. And then they'll say, well, we're all going to resign. And they'll say, well, okay, because we're not going to give you any money until you create some software patents. And so then they end up creating them. So, I mean, it's really embedded in the structure of the financing of the business as well. It's not, so it's more of a comment, I guess, in response to it.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's another attack, which is, you can create a patent thicket and then you don't have to worry because Microsoft will sue you. You come to an agreement where you cross-license your patents. You're fine, but it doesn't solve the GPL problem because you still can't release. If you want to use GPL licensed software, you can't then incorporate Microsoft stuff into it because you're required by the GPL license to then re-release into the wild what you've done. Unless you're very clever at how you partition stuff. It allows you to create companies, commercial companies, but it doesn't really further the interest of free software.
All right.
Thanks.